I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. Here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through other approach. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Well, certainly a story that's grabbed a lot of attention recently, and rightly so. Is another shooting that took place last week in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and this time, though, it was a young 17-year-old white man who shot and killed two radical members of Antifa, radical Jews, as it turns out, both of them with criminal records, who had been attacking him. Now, he has since been arrested and charged with murder. He's, through his lawyer, he's already pleading self-defense, and there's a great deal of information and evidence that this indeed was self-defense, and that this man Kyle Rittenhouse is really a hero. This is an issue we're going to really want to watch carefully, and I'm hoping the white nationalists across the world will pile in support this man. This violence can be led, or the violence in which he was caught up, can be directly linked to the failure of usually Democratic mayors and sometimes governors to adequately control the out of control, the violence of the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa. In instance after instance across the United States, white people have been attacked. In fact, just last week, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, while leaving the Republican, basically the the Republican presidential convention at the White House, he and his wife on the way back to their hotel were attacked by four members of Antifa, who were talking about fucking them up badly. Now that's street talk for killing them. Yeah, nice people. And they were saved by police. Now, this is only one example. Diners at restaurants in the D.C. area, in the D.C. suburbs, were attacked by flash crowds of Black Lives Matter and ordered to put their paws up in the air with a communist clenched fist salute, or else they were denounced and were attacked and intimidated. Now, this is going on all over the United States, and there's been a complete failure of the political establishment to regain law and order. Anyway, Kyle Rittenhouse didn't go to Kenosha, Wisconsin, to shoot protesters. He went to protect the property and lives of the people who were threatened by a rampaging mob that had already destroyed large parts of the city. Let's not forget that much of downtown Kenosha had been burned, looted, and trashed by the assorted Antifa and Black Lives Matter and other people protesting the shooting. Now, it was only shooting, wasn't killing, of a black man last week. Now, the very short video did make it look bad. Video of him leaning into his car and being shot from behind by a policeman, seven times in the back. He's left severely injured, but he was not killed. Now, this was a fellow named Jacob last week. Now, there are things about that incident that are not really entirely being clarified. That short video was only part of a longer effort to try to arrest him. Once again, a black man who is the police had a warrant for him. He was already wanted for domestic assault. The police believe he had a knife. He had instead of complying with police instructions, he was defying them, and that's a good way to get yourself hurt. Anyway, that is the background, and so various people protesting that shooting had looted, committed arson, attacked people, and made a mess out of the downtown area of the city of Kenosha, Wisconsin, which has a population of about 100,000 people. Anyway, that's why Kyle Rittenhouse went downtown. He went to fill the security vacuum the Democratic governor and mayor created when they failed to perform their sworn obligations to protect the people in their charge. They didn't do that. They left the city and its merchants exposed to the erratic and violent behavior of looters, vandals, and arsonists, which is why Rittenhouse showed up. He was there to stop the criminal gangs from doing more damage than they'd already done. People are getting injured, and our job is to protect this business. If someone is hurt, I'm running into harm's way. That's why I need my rifle to protect myself, Rittenhouse told a reporter from the Daily Caller. Unfortunately, Rittenhouse was attacked by a crowd on the property he was protecting, and the man was shot in the head. The man who was killed appears to be Joseph Rosenbaum, a, quote, registered sex offender for a crime involving a minor. Videos of the victim have popped up on Twitter, but we have no way of verifying them at this time. What we do know for certain is that Rittenhouse is responsible for the shooting deaths of two men and another who was wounded. There's also evidence that one of the men who attacked Rittenhouse was carrying a gun, and there's a picture there of this man, and there's, it's quite clear that he's got a short-barreled handgun in his hand. In a video that was widely circulated on the internet, Rittenhouse is seen running away from an angry group of protesters who trip him from behind and send him sprawling on the ground. While lying on the street, Rittenhouse quickly grabbed his assault rifle and shot an assailant who had hit him on the head with his skateboard. He then slowly rose to one knee and shot another attacker who was preparing to deliver a blow. The bloody clash scattered the other 15 or 20 potential assailants, who quickly did a U-turn and fled in the opposite direction. And there are pictures of Rittenhouse being attacked, of a man approaching to smash him with a skateboard. Rittenhouse was later taken into custody by police and charged with first-degree murder. The Antioch Police Department released the following statement on Wednesday. This morning, Kenosha County authorities issued an arrest warrant for the individual responsible for the incident, charging him with first-degree intentional homicide. The suspect in this incident, a 17-year-old Antioch resident, is currently in custody at the Lake County Judicial System, pending an extradition hearing to transfer custody from Illinois to Wisconsin. Rittenhouse has been assigned a public defender and faces charges of first-degree intentional homicide. Reasonable people should be able to agree that the situation should never have been allowed to deteriorate to the point where a young man felt the need to take up arms to defend an American city from the type of senseless violence we've seen for the last 10 weeks. But that's what happened. And the blame should not be placed on Rittenhouse, but on the Democratic leaders, mayor and governor, and their criminal allies in the media, who have applauded the activities of the rioters while failing to mention the horrific damage that they've done. It's shameful. Also, there's a world of difference between freedom of assembly, and looting and arson and vandalism. The media knows the difference, but continues to perpetuate the myth that these are mostly, quote, peaceful protests conducted by principal demonstrators who seek only social justice. Nothing could be further from the truth. How does one achieve social justice by burning down a mattress warehouse or looting a pancake restaurant or demolishing an entire fleet of new cars or spray painting and firebombing a federal courthouse? How do these activities square with the teachings of Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi or leaders in the anti-war movement? They don't. Black Lives Matter is not a protest movement. It's not even a civil rights movement. It's a Trojan horse funded by sinister globalist troublemakers who believe that violence is an acceptable means for advancing their narrow political agenda. And let's not kid ourselves. The real objective is likely the exact opposite of what they claim to seek. That is, the inevitable deployment of federal troops followed by the establishment of a centrally controlled federal police force, no different from the Stasi. That's the real objective. Absolute martial law in the hands of, you guessed it, a democratic puppet, the democratic puppet masters and their deep state friends. There was another violent eruption in Seattle last night that's being conveniently ignored by the crooked media. Here's a story from Kiro News 7. Seattle police officers were forced to kick their way out of an East Precinct exit door Monday night after rioters jammed it with boards and rebar and attempted to seal the door closed with quick dry cement. After the door was being jammed, surveillance video shows several people building a fire outside the building near the exit door in an attempt to set the building on fire. And that would have incinerated the police officers. I think that what this shows is that these people are intent on killing police officers, said Mike Solon, the president of the Seattle Police Guild, who called the act clear domestic terrorism. We're being held hostage by a group of 100 to 150 people that are bent on destroying this city and hurting police officers, Solon said. Solon said a short time later, the guild headquarters had become the target of 3 firebombs. Our surveillance video captured 2 individuals scouting our location for several hours, Solon said. Surveillance videos from that location shows one of the firebombs bursting, igniting the building's rear stairway in flames, before officers were able to extinguish the fire. Solon said officers were dispirited when no one in city leadership denounced the attacks. That's why it's incumbent upon our elected officials to put a stop to this immediately, he said. How can leaders be so feckless? It can't just be the officers. This is an absolute overthrow attempt of some of our governmental institutions, and police are in the way. They or the officers will get killed, hurt or killed, so that they can put forth that agenda. Got that? Our esteemed social justice warriors tried to burn cops to death in their own precinct last night, and our flunky media failed to report even to report the incident. Nice, eh? They must have been covering something else important, like Trump's latest post on Twitter. As you may know, Seattle isn't run by utopian blockheads who want to defund the police just as violent crime, drug use, and homelessness have skyrocketed to new heights, and just as street violence has become a nightly event. Now the fanatical city council is trying to shrug off the news that hooded thugs torched the police headquarters, putting everyone inside the building at risk of a fiery and agonizing death. What sort of mad world do we live in? By the way, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has offered his sympathy to the family of Jacob Blake, that's the Negro, who was shot while resisting arrest by Wisconsin police last weekend. Referring to Blake, Biden said, "What I saw in that video makes me sick. Once again, a black man, Jacob Blake, is being shot by the police in broad daylight with the whole world watching." New video from the scene shows that Blake was resisting arrest and putting officers at risk by attempting to enter the front seat of his SUV. Neither Biden nor anyone else knows whether there was a weapon in the front seat. So Biden's comments are clearly an attempt to prejudice the case against the police. Why would he do that unless he thought there was some political advantage in it? Biden asked, "Put yourself in the shoes of every black father and black mother in this country and ask, is this what we want America to be? Is this the country we should be?" Again, why is he saying this? Is Biden really so desperate for black votes that he'll try to influence the course of a murder investigation? Yes, that's exactly what he's doing. He's blaming the cops before he's even heard the details because he thinks it might help him win the election. That's Joe Biden in a nutshell. Note, we now know that Blake did have a knife in the front seat, but will that be enough to wrangle an apology out of Biden? Don't hold your breath. So, where do we go from here? Is the Rittenhouse incident a one-off, or is it the beginning of something much bigger? Will we see a sharp uptick in the rioting and looting, or will we begin to see more pushback from people who've had enough and who don't think social justice can be achieved by breaking windows, toppling statues, and burning down cities? Will the police and National Guard finally restore peace and order, or will we slip deeper into fratricidal warfare and chaos? The only thing that's certain is that there's no putting the genie back into the bottle. The Democrats and the media have encouraged this madness from the very beginning by praising the protests while downplaying the magnitude of the damage. It was all part of a political calculation that has backfired spectacularly. Now the mob is emboldened, and no amount of destruction will satisfy its lust for more violence. You can see it in the rioters' faces. It's all a game, and they're enjoying it. They feel powerful now, and they like it. That's going to be hard to change. But it will change, and change won't be pretty. The state will deploy all its assets to reclaim its monopoly on violence. You can bet that. Security will be reestablished with brute force and an iron fist. A crackdown is coming, and the innocent are going to get crushed along with the guilty. It didn't have to be this way. This could all have been avoided if our scheming Democratic leaders had chosen to protect the people instead of kowtowing to the mob. The blood is on their hands. And this is actually a commentary by Mike Whitney. I would agree with the vast majority of it. It's very, very powerful. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. What did I have here? Oh, yes, from Money's Globe and Mail. Statue debate reignited after protests toppled the Sojourner McDonald Monument in Montreal. The destruction of a Sojourner McDonald's statue that stood in downtown Montreal since 1895 is reigniting political debate over the legacy of Canada's first prime minister. Now, most political leaders, even Justin Trudeau, in a very mealy-mouthed comment, and I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but political leaders, the leftish mayor of Montreal, the rightish premier of the province of Quebec, Premier Jason Kenney in Alberta, have all condemned as utterly unacceptable the action by about 100 anarchists over the weekend first of all, spray painted and then threw ropes around the statue of Sojourner McDonald. And he was Canada's first prime minister and the key father of the Confederation. They threw ropes around the statue after having spray painted it, pulled it down, and the head was either knocked off or was smashed. But there it is, lying in a public park with the head severed. And, of course, this was done by a group that calls itself Coalition for BIPOC. That's, and BIPOC is Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. You might perhaps have some problem with that. I mean, how can I mean, aren't Black people of color? I mean, but anyway, that's this coalition. And it describes itself as a collective of social justice groups and community activists from across the country. The group's Facebook page posted a video of the McDonald statue coming down, along with a message calling for the removal of all statues and plaques that promote anti-Black racism or anti-Indigenous racism. The group calls for a 50% budget cut for the Montreal police, with money reinvested in Black and Indigenous communities, along with other social demands. Well, the Black and Indigenous communities are not that large in the city of Montreal. So what are they're supposed to get half of the present police budget? I mean, it's nuttiness. It's the type of thing you might expect from a kindergarten student. Police, of course, stood by and did nothing. They should have been in there with the pepper spray, if necessary, the nightsticks, and arrested these people. Anyway, some of the commentary is fascinating. Their demand is that all statues and plaques that promote anti-Black racism or Indigenous or anti-Indigenous racism. Well, the Sojourner McDonald statue doesn't promote anything. It honors our first prime minister and the man whose act of will actually forged this country. It's not promoting anything. Nothing about white supremacy or any Black. I mean, there hardly even any Blacks in Canada at the time. I think that that has to be remembered. A statue doesn't promote anything. An individual who responded to the group's email account declined to interview an interview request. So they these are just simply violent vandals and thugs. University of Manitoba Native Studies professor Ni Gan Wawiwidan, that's I guess his native name, impronounceable, James Sinclair, said in an interview Sunday that removing statues that are offensive to Indigenous people does not mean Canada is erasing history. Oh, that's good. I think the people have spoken, he said. If we keep a statue where it is inherently violent toward Indigenous people, then we're saying that today's violence against Indigenous people is okay. What violence is there against Indigenous people? There's a lot of violence within the Indian community. Women being raped, women being beaten up, women being murdered. Let's just take what this goofy, and I've got to say goofy, professor is saying. I think the people have spoken. The people have what, 100 thugs? If we keep a statue up where it is inherently violent toward Indigenous people. So the statue is a formation of metal in the image of a man. It's not violent toward anybody. It's a statue. Professor Sinclair said the tone of the protest contrasted with the previous comments. Premier Jason Kenney of Manitoba called the people who destroyed the statue or toppled it a mob. Who's the one being violent? Who's calling that group a mob? He said. Well, Jason Kenney didn't punch anybody in the face. Jason Kenney didn't haul any statue down. There's this almost bizarre equation of words with violence. And Jason Kenney actually offered Edmonton as a home for the statue if Quebec doesn't want it. By the way, if you put it up in Edmonton, people in Edmonton will take it down. Really? People? He's essentially empowering and authorizing a group of street thugs to determine what statues can and cannot stand. It's not the people. It's never, let's be very clear, this is not done by the people. And further, Quebec Heritage Minister and Montreal area Liberal MP Stephen Gibeault provide the federal government's response. Now, this is absolutely nonsense. Don't forget, this man is the minister tasked with preserving Canadian heritage and culture. God help us. He says, our government has always stood with those who do not have a safe space to express themselves. While the current debate is important, we believe the dialogue is a better engine for progress than isolated attacks of vandalism, like we have witnessed. Okay, so dialogue's better than vandalism. Yeah, so far so good. Well, how did he start that off? Our government has always stood with those who do not have a safe space to express themselves. What does that mean? Who didn't have a safe space to express themselves? The social justice warriors or the BIPOCs, what do they call themselves? Black, Indigenous, and people of color, the Coalition for the Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. They didn't have a safe space.
Of course they did. They had a public protest. The police didn't even interfere with them when they started trashing and destroying a statue in a safe space. There was nobody preventing these people from BIPOC, from articulating whatever issue it was that they wanted to articulate. This sort of mealy-mouthed acquiescence or suggestion that somehow their rights were in peril. They didn't have any problem whatsoever in expressing their thoughts or their grievances. Our government will continue to advocate for public places that are inclusive, safe, and free from all forms of violence or harassment. So our government, that's the Liberal government, will continue to advocate for public places that are inclusive, safe, and free from all forms of violence. Well, how's that even the issue? Nobody was preventing these people from protesting, and the violence was perpetrated by them. Well, anyway, Justin Trudeau on Monday made some comments about this, and superficially, especially if you only heard the English the English version. It sounded good. All right. You know, he said, you know, we condemn vandalism, and that's not the way to proceed. Yeah, okay. So far, so good. However, in French, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has blamed unspecified extreme right groups for using the toppling of Montreal's Sir John A. Macdonald statue for political gain. Oh yeah, so if you disagree, or if you denounce what was done, well, you're using it for political gain. Quote, and this is what he said, this in French, not in English. We've seen following the people on either side of the spectrum trying to use these elements as a way of furthering debates. I'm not sure what he means. I mean, furthering debates, isn't that a good thing? Something was done here, and or the statue was vandalized, and this will further debate. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Discussion. Then he goes on to say, I think we're seeing, particularly on the extreme right, that they're trying to start culture wars and divide Canadians on issues such as that. they're trying to start a culture war. Now, you see, this is along with criticisms of people being divisive. You see, if you disagree with the radical social justice warrior agenda, well, then you're being divisive. And the only way you can avoid being divisive is by going along with it. Well, that doesn't allow for much debate, does it? And, of course, it's hard to know. What does he call them? Extreme right? Extreme right groups are. It's not groups. There's been widespread condemnation of this this action by the Premier of Quebec, by the Mayor of Montreal, by Jason Kenney, and by a good many other people. What Trudeau, I think, fears is that this vandalism is waking a lot of people up to the fact that ours is a society under attack, and that radical elements in this society
are trying to essentially bring about a coup d'etat. Very, very bizarre. Well, there was a very good commentary in today's National Post by a longtime columnist, Rex Murphy. And his headline was, Vandalism is not protest. In Montreal over the weekend, about 200 vandals pulled down a statue of one of Canada's founders, Sir John A. Macdonald. They were mainly referred to by the media as protesters. But the truth is that they were protesters until they put ropes around the statue, hauled it down, and decapitated it. At that point, they became vandals. I think we can all agree on that. So far, we have not heard from the high-salaried National Hockey League players on where they stand on this protest. I think their voices need to be heard. After all, they eagerly entered into the discussion over this issue when they followed their even better paid big brothers in the National Basketball Association and the NFL by publicly supporting the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States. You know, they refused to play in the NHL one game last week. And that was by way of solidarity with Black Lives Matter. And Rex Murphy asks a very important question here. Okay, you hockey players stormed into the political debate supporting these black anti-white terrorists. In taking their stand, they failed to mention, that's the NHL people, whether they are fully in tune with Black Lives Matter demands, in particular whether they support the abolishment of police forces, and whether they are in equal harmony with the dominant slogan of the movement, namely that all cops are bastards. Well, it'd be interesting to see. Here, you NHL players, and I think this is a way of being trendy, gaining applause from much of the left-wing media and so on, cast your lot in with Black Lives Matter. Okay, they wanted to defund the police. It would be interesting to see how those players would react if there were no police at hockey games. And let's say a partisan crowd, not happy with a ref's decision, were to start hurling things at the rink. Maybe even hurling things at the team of which they disapproved, harassing, jostling, maybe even hurting players on their way to their locker rooms, to the dressing rooms. Police are always around to maintain law and order. Well, supposing they were defunded and they weren't there. I guess the NHL attention whores hadn't thought of that one. Anyway, Rex Murphy continues. The rule of law, civil courtesy apply to protesters too. If their great stand, that's the NHL, had any real guts behind it, they should declare their position on these matters. They might even go so far as to tell their fans and countrymen what they think of the general mayhem consuming so many cities in the United States. They should, in other words, echo the refreshing levels of clarity we received from Montreal Mayor Valérie Plante. In discussing Saturday's distemper, she said, "I strongly condemn the acts of vandalism that took place this afternoon in downtown Montreal, which led to the John A. Macdonald statue being torn down. Such gestures cannot be accepted and nor tolerated." She also showed off her gifts of clarity and open thought when she said, "Some historical monuments here as elsewhere are at the heart of current emotional debates.
I reiterate that it's better to put them in context rather than remove them. I'm also in favor of adding monuments that are more representative of the society to which we aspire. Both of those are good points. Rather than tearing down a statue or vandalizing it, if people wanted a discussion around the man in the honored by the statue, that's fair enough. Or, rather than say, well, we don't approve of the politics of Sir John A. Macdonald in today's context. Why not? But he played an important role in Canadian history. A far better approach would be just to then say, well, we would like to raise a monument to so-and-so. And in all ages, the monuments and plaques reflect the values of the time. Or perhaps more accurately, the personalities and the issues of the time. Sir John A. Macdonald pulled off a near human superhuman feat in uniting these disparate colonies, conflicting religions, mutually not exactly supportive linguistic groups, forged them into a nation. He was a man for that time. And his role cannot be underestimated or forgotten. That doesn't mean other politicians or leaders don't come along and make contributions relevant to this time. And of course, they should be on it. That's the way a healthy society would proceed. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, apparently keen not to let this little kerfuffle upset his weekend, waited until Monday, 48 hours, to finally speak out against the vandalism. Until that time, the Liberals had largely been silent on the incident, save for Heritage Minister Stephen Gibault. From such a minister, particularly one from Quebec, which is relevant to this context, we have a right to expect a level of clarity equal to that of Mayor Plante. Here is what the present-day Guardian of Canadian Heritage had to say on the mauling of the Macdonald Memorial. Quote, our government has always stood with those who do not have a safe space to express themselves. Rex Murphy says, and what on our global warming threatened Earth is that supposed to mean? Safe space? That's the jargon used by the Campus Social Justice Warrior chapter. And if those he's referring to are the vandals, they certainly seem to be in a safe space when they hauled the statue down as the police stood idly by. And where in Canada is the space where people cannot express themselves? Perhaps only those spaces that are in close proximity to any of those protests. The minister continued, while the current debate is important, we believe that dialogue is a better engine for progress. Is the debate he's referring to, as it's contrasted with the dialogue, the actions of the mob of the self-appointed righteous people destroying a public monument? He did finally get to acknowledge that these isolated acts of vandalism, I've already mentioned that. Here's a couple of thoughts. If you do not like a representative of some historical, representation of some historical Canadian figure, that does not entitle you or your friends to tear it down. Other Canadians may like and want to see it stay. And those other Canadians are likely to be more numerous and certainly have better manners. Being a protester or activist is not a personal identification. The views of protesters and activists are not, by any logic known to the human intellect, superior to the views of other people. Nor do those views release their holders from civic courtesy. The rule of law or any section of our statutes that prohibit the destruction of public property. Finally, protesters are not superior to the rules and temper of the democracy that allows protests in the first place. Vandalism is not protest. And then he concludes with another reference or another incident that I find quite disturbing. And by the way, there was an ugly echo to the Toronto incident to the Montreal incident, that's the vandalism of the Sojourner Macdonald statue, in Toronto on Sunday, when a statue of the Virgin Mary was decapitated by vandals at Our Lady of Lebanon Church. This incident goes to show that nothing is more contagious than tolerated disorder. Want further proof? Just look at what's happening in our neighbor to the south.
I think, as usual, Rex Murphy makes some very good points. Well, this is Paul Tron. You're on the fighting side of me. Going to take a musical break right now, and I'm going to play a couple of cuts from Queens of Country music that honors some of the great ladies of country and western music. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com.
When you found somebody new, I thought I never would forget you, for I thought then I never could. But time has taken all the pains away. Until now, I felt the hurt once a day, once a day. Speed.
Thank you. problem, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back to the game tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Prom, and you're on the fighting side of me, here on AltRightTV.com.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka's Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.